This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. So much of baseball revolves around lore, stories arising from personal experiences of the game and from statistics that align with tales of great plays, players, and seasons of the past. For many decades, the numbers for American baseball were missing a huge piece of the sport's history because they left so many Black athletes' achievements out. That finally changed on May 29th when Major League Baseball announced the official incorporation of the Negro League statistics into its record book. Among those here in St. Louis who've been waiting for that change is Ed Wheatley, baseball historian and author of many beloved baseball books and co-author of St. Louis Browns, The Story of a Beloved Team, and Incredible Cardinals. And he joins us now to talk about the change. Ed, welcome back to the show.
I'm glad to be back. Always enjoy it here.
So before we get to that Negro Leagues incorporation into MLB records, Ed, I think it's worth it to acknowledge that there have been commemorative efforts in the region to remember the history and legacy of St. Louis's role in the Negro Leagues. Can you remind us of some of those?
Yeah, I mean, you know, St. Louis is the best baseball town in America, hands down. And even though we look back at those early years, you think it's a white game. No, it was a segregated game, and there were Black players and Black leads playing all along, up until 1920 when the official start of the Negro League began. But even before then, there were many decades. You know, it was no different. Baseball was the game of that time. And so we have a rich history here in St. Louis coming out of it with the Giants and the Stars and the memorable players. And we have memorable things that happened in St. Louis, like when the St. Louis Browns, the first team to field two African Americans, just shortly after Jackie Robinson, April 1947, by July, we have the third and fourth African Americans to cross that white chalk line. Unfortunately, I always joke about people don't remember who the third and fourth men were to walk on the moon. We unfortunately don't really remember who the third and fourth men to cross that white line, and they were for St. Louis Browns. And then we had one of the greatest players here in Satchel Paige. And I always tell everybody when they drive downtown on Highway 40 to Busch Stadium, and they come upon Shea Fitz Arena at St. Louis U, take a quick look to the left, and there's a baseball field. That is where Stars Park was. And that's, we should remember all these things.
Now, there were more than 2,300 Negro League players.
Yes.
And they will now be part of the official MLB records.
Correct.
So you've just mentioned Satchel Paige. Tell us about some of the other notable St. Louis players who will now be part of that record book.
Well, there, you know, there's going to be dozens and dozens. But the Negro Leagues really comes in two parts. From 1920, when it was farmed, until 1931, it collapsed because of the Depression financially and, you know, the way the world was going in the Depression. Then it came back in the late 1930s and then went into 1962. But really then the heyday period of the second period was in the 40s, and we hear more about, you know, the Kansas City Monarchs and such. But, you know, it was across many of these years, decades, that many men. And St. Louis has five men in the Cooperstown Hall of Fame. They started inducting Black players back in the 1970s. And we have five notables. We have Oscar Charleston, who, you know, is probably one of the greatest. And we'll talk about how he jumped into the stats of Major League Baseball's leadership. And one of the homegrown great names here in St. Louis is Cool Papa Bell.
Yes.
So many stories about Cool Papa. And then Willie Wells, James Mackey, Mule Suttle. And, you know, the thing that people don't really remember also, the Stars claim three championship titles in 28, 30, and 31.
Right. Let's talk a little bit more about that, because these teams, I mean, the St. Louis Stars began as the St. Louis Giants.
Correct.
And that was as early as 1909.
Correct.
So the team that we've talked about, players, what was the team like in its earliest days?
Well, the St. Louis Giants were a pretty doggone good team. They had a stadium called Giants Park, and there was right, if you are familiar, headed like towards from downtown to the airport on Highway 70, just on the riverside of Highway 70 at that big bend at O'Fallon Park is where that stadium sat.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a nice stadium. And, you know, they were good play. Oscar Charleston, who we'll speak of in a moment, was their prime player. And it was owned by a man named Charles Mills. He was a businessman, African-American. He brought this team together and built it. They actually had series with the Cardinals during the season or after the season. They have special games, and they actually defeated the Cardinals in one of those series. So mm-hmm. they had good players. And then really what happened was Mills didn't really get along with Rube Foster, who was the president of the Negro Leagues. And they really pushed him out in 1921, and that's when Sam Shepard, Dr. Shepard, bought the Stars, changed their name from the Giants to the Stars, put the money in, brought in these really good players that led to the championships in 28, 30, and 31.
Mm-hmm. So it did not take long at all for them to prove that they were excellent players.
Oh, they were, yes.
What did that do for St. Louis?
Well, I mean, you know, what you had was the birth of baseball greatness in St. Louis for the whites and the blacks. And as I said, they would play games against each other. And so, you know, you were rooting for both. 1928 is an example. The Cardinals were in the World Series,
mm-hmm.
but the Yankees beat them. Just up the street on Grand Avenue down here, to Grand and Market and Compton area, that's where Stars Park was. The Stars were the champions of the world in the Negro Leagues.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, people could root for both of them. And then, you know, throughout the heritage of St. Louis sports and tied to the Negro Leagues, you had Satchel Paige, you know, who would come from the Monarchs over to Cleveland, in 1948, and he helped the Cleveland Indians and Bill Veeck win the world championship. In 1951, he comes to St. Louis and plays here with the Browns in 51, 52, 53. He's an all-star. But he would also bring road trip games, you know, where he would bring players and they would just have, you know, scratch games where it was for, you know, a benefit of this and that.
Mm.
So, and they were, you know, Babe Ruth and Satchel Paige or Dizzy Dean a lot of times played and traveled with Satchel Paige. So it was a mixture of blacks and white players.
Mm-hmm. And in the context of what we are discussing overall,
mm-hmm.
which is that incorporation
yes.
of Negro Leagues statistics
Correct.
With the ones of Major League
Correct.
Baseball, to what extent does that official incorporation give some much-deserved attention to those who've passed. And, I mean, there is a memorial
yeah.
near Harristow State University.
Yes.
Marks where
Stars Park was.
Right. When we look at that, I mean, does that change the way that we look at it?
I don't think it changes the way we look at it. What it does is it tells people more, this is where it happened. You know,
mm.
I always say, you know, the famous song from the play and movie Hamilton, this, you know, the room where it happened,
mm-hmm.
this is the park where it happened, you know? And so it brings attention to where they were. And just as I spoke, we had a plaque from Sabre over on Giants Stadium and it disappeared. We're looking to get it back so that people can visit and visualize. But it, you know, it really set the focus that St. Louis had this special town and these special people. You know, one of the greatest markers of Negro League baseball, if people were, you know, listening to this and wanted to really go out and see something special, St. Peter's Cemetery up in Normandy
mm-hmm.
at Lucas and Hunt and St. Louis Avenue, the intersection, is Peter's Cemetery. And if you go in there and just to the left, you will see Cool Papa Bell's tomb, I mean, his gravestone. It's not just a stone, it's like a 10-foot obelisk with all his little famous sayings and things
wow.
like, you know, you don't look back because you don't know who's coming, you know, things of this nature. And it is something that's worth seeing.
Mm-hmm. We need to take a very quick break, but we'll be back shortly to continue this conversation. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio. Welcome back. So, Ed, before the break, we were talking about what we see around town that recognizes the great players of the Negro Leagues. Now, with the announcement of integration of these statistics, what does that mean on a national level?
Well, it changes, you know, the leaderboard, you would say. And, you know, a good example is Ty Cobb, you know, going back to the 20s and all the way up to, you know, a couple weeks ago, was viewed as having the highest career batting average. You know, he was at 367. Well, all of a sudden, when we bring in the inclusion of the Negro League players, Josh Gibson surpasses him at 372.
Mm-hmm.
So all of a sudden, now, you know, 60 years, 80 years later, these Negro League players are all of a sudden, their names are appearing in these leaderboards of these categories. And one of the most important for us in St. Louis was Oscar Charleston, who played here 1 year with the Giants. And, you know, all of a sudden, he is now the third, ranks third in the all-time career batting average at 363. So, you know, you don't have these two men in you know, the previous decades or previous century of baseball for their stats. And so you're seeing men like that, like Oscar Charleston, as I spoke, is now the third highest career batting average. He's sixth in on-base percentage, seventh in slugging percentage, fifth in OPS. So you can see just by that ranking, he's in the top 10 in so many categories, how good he really was.
Mm-hmm.
But they were forgotten figures in a way because they weren't in the record books. They weren't in anything. And now they're going to be, and they're going to be recognized.
Right. Well, and there are some people who've not necessarily been on board.
Correct.
With this change.
Right.
You know, some who say that it's not fair because of that, you know, not apples to apples, apples to oranges, or whatever fruit
right.
we're talking about. And what do you have to say to that argument?
Well, I say, you know, as I was saying before, you look at these hitter statistics of the 20s and 30s. You look at the pitching statistics of the dead ball era. I mean, you know, a very famous St. Louis and Pud Galvin, who's in the Hall of Fame, won 300 games before Cy Young. He talks about the day he threw a perfect game. They used one ball the whole game in those days, and it was raining, and it was sopping wet. Nobody could hit it. So there were different rules. Just using one example about pitching, you know, the old days when they could do the spitball or coffee ball, they could, you know, really shine up the ball, do all kinds of things. Those aren't there, but players had to bat with that. They had to pitch in those ways. So, you know, it's like you can take any decade or any generation of baseball and find nuances. I mean, you look at what we went through in the 90s with the steroids and all. Was that fair, you know, and all that stuff? So, you know, it's a great game. We shouldn't nitpick it. And, you know, whether the guy played 80 games in a season and he still hit 430, you know, don't take it away from him, you
mm-hmm.
know. And some of them may not have been as good to make the major leagues, but then, you know, many of the white players were held back because of the reserve clause, and we don't ever know how good they could have been because they never made it to the majors as well because mm-hmm. of the reserve clause. So there's things you can go back and forth in this pendulum of discussion, but, you know, simple, get over it. We're all together. We all love baseball. We all play it. We all go out on the same diamond. We run 90 feet to first base and all that, you know.
Before we go any further, I have to ask, what is a coffee ball?
It was just taking, you know, the juices and the thing, you rub them up. It's how, you know, instead of Vaseline, you use different things.
Okay.
I mean, there's all kinds of junk that you can doctor a ball, and especially in the old days. I'm not saying they do it today, but they probably do certain things. But,
right.
You know, you're looking for that advantage. But then everything was legal in those days.
Mm-hmm. So before we move any further,
mm-hmm.
Ed, you had talked about St. Louis as mm-hmm. being America's greatest baseball
Correct.
Town. And yes, that is true.
Yeah.
But I think sometimes it's assumed that people have sort of a greater familiarity with the sport's history than they actually do. So, I mean, if we were to take a step back and you were to give a brief history of what the Negro Leagues were, what would that be? How would you describe it?
Well, the Negro Leagues were, in a Jim Crow segregated world, they were just like the major leagues, but they didn't have the financing of the teams. They often, and there was a good friend of mine, Nate Crump, who they kept wanting him to play in the Negro Leagues, and he instead did other great things in America with NASA and President Kennedy and President Johnson doing affirmative action. But he chose not to do Negro Leagues. One of the reasons was a lot of these guys, they didn't travel, luxury trains and like the white players.
Right.
There were times, if you've seen the movie The Green Book, mm-hmm. It was the same thing for these players. They would be on buses and, could they get to the next town in time if the game didn't go to get to where they could stay in a town that accepted Negro players? Could they find a restaurant or do they sleep on the bus or go pick apples out of an orchard? So those are some of the things that people do not fully understand or recognize what these men went through as well. Mm-hmm. The white players did have certain luxuries that the Negro Leagues didn't. But, when they played, whether it was at Sportsman's Park here, July 4th, 1941, packed all the African-American and white community watching him together. That was the one day prior to 1944 when Sportsman's Park here in St. Louis was the last Major League Stadium to be integrated, where they could sit anywhere. It was mm-hmm. always before they African Americans had to sit in the right field pavilion. But back in 1941, old Satchel came to town and says, "You want us to play here? Everybody can sit anywhere." Mm-hmm. And so 3 years before they would segregate. So, there were these constraints. But, it's, as I said before, you throw the ball, you run 90 feet, you got to go around all four, three bases to touch home, to score. Rules are the same. It's just the money factor, the economics, financially, that impaired some teams. They weren't getting the same pay, but it's the love of the game.
Yeah.
That's what baseball is about, the love of the game.
Well, and speaking of that and differences beyond the money,
yeah,
you talked about some of the things that the players had to deal with before and after mm-hmm. they were playing the game itself.
Yeah.
But the Negro Leagues did differ from Major League Baseball in their style of play.
Oh, it was much faster, much hustle bustle, and the fans actually enjoyed it. And they started finding out, especially up in Chicago, where they were pulling fans from the White Sox and Cubs because they liked the style of play. And we've written about that in a bunch of these books, that it really caught on, and the Whites had to like, oh, we got to giddy up and, to draw that attention back.
Yeah. Are there any moments in Negro Leagues history that eclipse maybe some of the most iconic moments in Major League Baseball?
Well, I think there was always instances. Everybody can find a game. I can go and tell you a dozen different stories of Satchel Paige and what he did on certain days, or how when, let's say the Yankees would play against Josh Gibson in the Homestead Grays, and Gibson would out-hit Babe Ruth, and they would beat the Yankees, or certain teams in the Negro Leagues would beat a Dizzy Dean, let's say. Great moment down in Rickwood Stadium, where the Cardinals are going to be mm-hmm. in a week, about Dizzy Dean was being outpitched in the World Series in the minor league between the Texas and the Sally Leagues. And there's many of these you can claim. And, the players themselves were a little flashy, too. When they had their buses, they were all dialed up. The buses were all, highfalutin advertising. But there's also a little bit of a sadness to it. As we spoke about Cool Papa Bell, when he got elected into the Hall of Fame, and they couldn't find him at first. To tell him, you've been elected to the Hall of Fame. And they found him, a janitor down in City Hall. Somebody said, oh, I know where he's at. He's a janitor in the St. Louis City Hall. And, I think about that a lot, that, as we think about how a man is supposed to be told, you just made it to the Hall of Fame. And they had to find Cool Papa mm-hmm. to tell him.
Good luck for him. I think that gets to this question about how things are different now. Mm-hmm. I mean, baseball as a business, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it was a business then, too. I mean, there was a lot of, I wouldn't say scandals, but there were some big business question marks about the way the Negro Leagues were run by, their leadership, mm-hmm. Which was really, they were run by African Americans. But it was that actually led to a little bit of the scandal that I spoke of earlier, how Charles Mills lost the Giants and he was kind of forced out and was forced to sell. And the new owners changed the name from Giants to Stars. But like everything in history, whether it's black, white, baseball, it repeats itself.
Mm-hmm.
Because in 31 years, 32, Major League Baseball is going to force Bill Veeck to sell the Browns, just like they force Mr. Mills to sell the Giants.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's just, you find, that's the beauty of history and beauty of doing research, and these stories are all there.
How important is it, you think, Ed, you were talking about kids,
mm-hmm.
and I had mentioned in the introduction that so much of baseball is about these stories.
Oh, it is.
How does this integration of statistics, how does it change the narrative that?
I think the change is that there's names being recognized. They're thrown out, and all of a sudden it's like an Oscar Charleston. He was black. Cool Papa Bell. He was black. Who is this? You take a little pride from the African American community, and maybe that will get some people interested in the game. But that's the thing about baseball, when you were first leading off and you were saying that it was heroes. Everybody had heroes. And they were brought by radio. They were brought in the newspapers. So much of our media coverage has changed that you don't see much about all these African-American players on these other teams, much less the white players, because, the paper doesn't put that much in the stories like they mm-hmm. used today. You know, radio. You think back in the 30s, we had the most powerful station really in the country at KMOX, and it was broadcasting. We were the most western and most southern city, and everybody learned about the great players coming to St. Louis because that was the way of teaching these about heroes.
Mm-hmm.
And, you want to call it hero worship or what? I think that's the thing, that this lure that you talked about that brought people today. A lot of these heroes in the African-American community are on the football field or the basketball court, and that's who they look up to.
Mm-hmm. So, Ed, were the St. Louis Stars games, the Giants or the Stars games, were they broadcast at all?
Very seldom. There were maybe an instance if they were playing in Chicago or here, and even how they were covered in the newspapers. We did have good coverage, but it was sketchy, so that when you go back and do that history, which has been this compiling, or when I'm doing stories in my books and researching for the events or the stars, it's sketchy at the best.
Well, an updated version of MLB's database,
mm-hmm.
it becomes public on
yes.
June 20th. What are you most excited about seeing, Ed?
Well, we've already got a lot of these have already been incorporated in Baseball Reference, which is kind of it's not a part of Major League Baseball's thing, but it's the statistics thing. The thing that is going to be exciting is to go looking in who's the leaders across Major League Baseball, who's the leaders in American and National Leagues now that these stats have been rebalanced, and then even in the teams. Where did any of these Negro League players who came to the Cardinals? Now, the Cardinals didn't get their first African American until 1954, Tom Alston.
Mm-hmm.
47 was that magic number with Brooklyn and Cleveland and the St. Louis Browns. And I always tell people how humbly it is that we learn about American history in school, about Boston being the cradle of liberty and democracy and the beacon on the hill. They were the last. 1959, 12 years after Jackie Robinson, Pumpsy Green finally took the field for the Boston Red Sox. So you learn about these people, you learn about these heroes, and that's who you want to be.
Mm-hmm. Another thing that's happening on June 20th and is a game,
yes,
a tribute game,
yes,
the St. Louis Cardinals, yeah, you mentioned this earlier, and the San Francisco Giants.
Right.
They're going to play that tribute game to the Negro Leagues in Alabama.
Yes, Birmingham, Alabama,
mm-hmm,
Rickwood Stadium, which is the oldest stadium in the country, 1910. Fenway Park comes in 1912, Wrigley Field in 1914. Rickwood Field is in Birmingham, as I said, which is the hometown of Willie Mays. And Willie Mays did play in the Negro League World Series there in 1948 before he came up with the New York Giants. So it's a tribute to the Negro Leagues. More importantly, it's a tribute to the great Willie Mays, who is the oldest living Hall of Famer. And, he's up there in, he's not the highest, oldest former living major leaguer, but he is the oldest living Hall of Famer and deserves the recognition,
mm-hmm,
before he goes out. But it's going to be a great thing of memories of the Negro Leagues.
Will you be there?
There's a good chance I'm going to be there.
Great.
Yes.
Ed Wheatley is a baseball historian and author of multiple books about baseball. He's also co-author of St. Louis Browns, The Story of a Beloved Team and Incredible Cardinals. Ed, thank you so much for coming back to talk with us.
Always great to be here with you.
This episode was produced and edited by Ella Kuziz.
With audio engineering by Emily Woodbury. Podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri, St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.